Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah, here we go.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
what?
My name
what?
Is
Mr. Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Yes, sir.
Never get sick of that intro. That's what it's all about. Here we go. Let's kick it off, fellas.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah.
Talking sports with the 12th man, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh.
That's what it's all about. We are officially on the air on this beautiful, beautiful Monday, January the 25th, 2016. And let's get this party started. I am Andre Peterson. No, let's have some fun, guys. I'm going to kick it off with a couple of, You like that? I'm glad you got that reference. Let's kick it off with my co-host. They are not getting blitzed and getting dominated at the line of scrimmage. Just kick it off first with just Mr. JQ. How you doing this evening, sir?
Oh, man, I'm doing good. Shabazz Snowzilla down here in Atlanta, and just got done watching Serena give Maria that work in the Australian Open. Doing all right. How about you, bro?
Hey, it's a fantastic evening. Thank you for that. And like I said, we survived Snowmageddon. Second year.
Y'all just had a dusting last week. That wasn't nothing.
You're right.
I know. Don't make fun of us, man, because apparently we don't know how to act, just like another person. I'm not going to talk about that. But Mr. Robert Ford, how are you doing this evening, sir?
Doing good, man. We was up to about 70 degrees down in NOLA today. No complaints. Only complaint I have is the Pelicans just lost tonight.
That should be for having 70 degrees.
We got
70
Joe
degrees.
Coast, America.
We have short sleeve shirts.
Like I said, revenge can come back another different way, man. Karma, remember that, Rob, okay? That's all I got to say. Let's kick it off, as always. If you want to call on the show, reach out to us, your boys. The number to call on the show, 424-243-9519. That is the call-in number. We're also available on Twitter. If you put in at the number 12, THMEN Sports, you'll find us in that space. And last but not least, we're also available on Facebook. You go to facebook.com/talkingsportsandtwelfthman, or if you put in 12th Man Sports, you will find us in that arena as well. Gentlemen, let's kick this off. Obviously, we had a great playoff weekend. We've kind of set the stage for Super Bowl 50, or L, as we're talking about. Let's kind of kick it off with the early preview predictions as far as Super Bowl 50. I would not be remiss if I talk about a dominating performance. I know you guys were texting back and forth. I was actually driving. But, man, just intense game.
Don't text
man,
and drive,
don't text and drive. No, I'm not talking about that. I was in the middle of stuff, too, but I was listening to the game. But when I finally got a chance to watch, like, fourth quarter, I was settled in. It was already over at that juncture. But, JQ, what are your kind of thoughts about what happened? And you can talk about either game if you want, kind of set the stage here as we talk about this Super Bowl 50.
Well, you know, I kind of don't feel like I'm qualified to talk about it because I was 0-2, and I think I might revoke my rights to pick any more games because I clearly don't know anything. But that that different defense, that was phenomenal against Tom Brady. He got hit 23 times in that game and just pushing him off his spot. And Von Miller made himself – a ton of money. I mean, I know they're going to franchise it, but my word, he was just unstoppable in that game. And the same thing goes true for me for that Carolina defense. I mean, Carson Palmer, I guess it goes to show anybody that's associated with the Bengals or played for the Bengals, do not pick them because, you know, six turnovers, two fumbles, and four interceptions. I'm just saying, that was horrible. He had every chance in the world to try to get them in that game, and he just, you know, here you go. I don't know if you saw the meme, you know, you get an interception, you get an interception, and you get an interception. I mean, it was pretty bad.
You get an interception.
So, you know, just a dominating performance. And I know we picked New England, but I was glad to see Peyton come out and manage the game, which is what we don't normally say a lot for him. He is, you know, directing and doing all the Omaha and all that good stuff. But, you know, he did enough to make sure that he didn't lose the game for them, giving away that defensive performance. So hats off to both of those defenses. It's going to – I think it's going to be a pretty good Super Bowl moving forward.
Yeah. So, Rob, let's kick it to you, Rob. So I know we both were like, this is what we wanted to happen, but what actually happened was a little bit different, Rob. So I'm going to kick it to you, sir, and get your thoughts and previews as far as Super Bowl 50.
Omaha.
Well, we're at least going to hear that at least one more game, that's for sure. But, yeah, getting back to the championship games this past weekend, totally agree. Von Miller was absolutely phenomenal, I'll tell you. What a quick first step. He's got a good knee bend on his pass rush. Incredible. Even DeMarcus Ware, to a certain extent, had a good game as well, coming off the edge for that Denver defense. I tell you what, though, New England could have still won that football game. They had a couple of fourth downs that they decided to go for it, and they did not go for it. I mean, I'm sorry, they went for it and did not convert. They could have kicked some field goals in those couple of situations and probably would have had a chance to win that game in the end, or probably would have won the game in the end if they would have kicked the field goals on two occasions. And then, of course, you still had to miss extra point. You can almost make a case, as well as Denver defense played, New England really could have still won that game, or maybe even should have won that game. But not to take anything away from Denver. Once again, their defense was phenomenal. Even with, you know, even if New England would have still won the game 23-20, 24-20, still Denver defense played phenomenal in that football game. And then, of course, when you look at Carolina, okay, that was just a straight, old-fashioned beatdown. I can't say what we're on the air, so I can't say what I really want to say. But that was just an old fashioned. That was just an old fashioned beat down there, and nothing else to really say. Carolina right now is a team of destiny, and Cam Newton is clearly the league's MVP this season. There's no doubt about that. He got it done on both sides of the football, and offensively, I tell you, they've just gotten so much better as the year's gone along. They have one of the better offensive lines in the game, probably one of the better interior lines, too, with Ryan Khalil at center, Trey Turner at guard. I mean, they're just maulers in the middle of that offensive line, and they're solid. They're not great at the tackles, but they're solid, no Michael Ayer. But that interior line is a beast for Carolina. It's almost impossible to rush Cam Newton up the middle, and they run the ball effectively up the middle as well. And then their linebackers on defense with Kuechly and Thomas Davis. Thomas Davis, I believe, is the best weak side linebacker in the game. I know we're going to talk about him in a second. But the way I kind of see it going forward, if you have an early prediction, I see Carolina winning the Super Bowl over Denver. Once again, it, as well as Denver defense played, New England still could have really won that game. Don't get me wrong, I'm happy Denver won the game. I wanted them to win. But when you really look at that game, New England kind of shot themselves in the foot there on a few occasions, and it came back to haunt them in the end. And but I think Carolina is going to win this Super Bowl, and I think almost pretty decisively, too. I think at least 10 points.
Yeah, can I just jump back in there real fast, Dre? Because going back to Rob's point, it seems like you don't see Belichick and Brady get rattled like that. But even from the beginning, the Patriots always defer. And they got the ball, won the coin toss, and took the ball this time. And I was really shocked at that. They kind of got out of character, and Rob touched on it absolutely with the going for the first downs instead of going for the field goals. And I don't know if, you know, him missing that extra point rattled him, but he just made decisions that you don't normally see him make, right? And just from the get-go, but absolutely New England had a chance to win, but they took them out of their game. And that was just shocking to see for a Belichick coach team. And as far as the Super Bowl, it seems to me kind of like we've seen the story before, almost with the Patriots. You know, a couple of years ago, you got that really good defense coming there with Seattle. You got a wide receiver coordinator, a lot of people respect it. You got a mobile quarterback in Russell Wilson. Not that Russell was playing anywhere on the level that Cam is playing on right now, but that blueprint is there, and Rob is absolutely right. New England still could have stolen that game. And I think Carolina wins that game, too. I think Carolina wins that game 10 to 14 points as well. I hate it. I would love to see the Sheriff go out on top. Just for, you know, the storytelling, let him just go ahead and retire on top a la John Elway. But I think Carolina wins it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would definitely like to see Peyton go out on top as well, but I just don't see it. I think Carolina is just, once again, a team of destiny. Cam Newton, MVP, and their only hope is that Thomas Davis don't play in this game. And maybe you can take advantage of that some kind of way. But I just think Carolina is just too strong. And you never know, Denver may have been a little bit conservative at the end of that game with that 8-point lead. Maybe if New England kicks the field goal, maybe they be a little bit more aggressive. I guess you never can tell. But, you know, if you really go back, I think still New England possibly would have won that game if they would have settled for 3 points on a couple of those drives.
Yeah.
I just want to say I'm smarter than all of you guys. This is Bill Belichick. The reason why I didn't because I didn't want to go for the field goals. I want to go all in and keep scoring. I'm smarter than you guys. I should have cheated. All right, no, just joking. Hey, I definitely agree. A couple things are out of character, guys. And, yeah, man, I agree with you, everything, guys. I think that it's definitely the Carolina Panthers are a team of destiny, as much as we hate to admit that in our division. But Cam's playing unbelievable. And like you said, Rob, even though the Denver defense, I mean, they did play phenomenal, they still barely won that game, as much as we talk about Patriots, and it still came down to that too, man. So, you know, we'll talk about that in a quick second too, because of that and what happened. And I'm going to say this really quick point about Carson Palmer and JQ. Give him credit because you know he was very classy at the end of the interview, and he was saying something like, you know, and they asked him, you know, well, because of the fact you guys were behind, you guys pressed a little bit. He's like, yeah, maybe I did press, but he was like, I'm not throwing five little checkdowns. I'm actually going deep. I'm trying to press the issue. So I give him credit. At least he tried to come back, you know. And yeah, now granted, he made a lot of mistakes, but he's like, we're not doing checkdowns. You know, we're trying to, like, you know, at least try to score. Larry Fitzgerald had a bad game. He dropped a couple passes, and then obviously it's just the momentum for the Panthers just kind of kicked in too. But anyway, like I said, I give him respect, you know, in spite of he had not one of his best games. And like I said, I'm a huge fan of Bruce Arians. I think he's doing the right thing. I don't know. We'll talk about what the need for moving forward for next year. But you know, that's one that I just want to kind of point out as far as let's not beat up on Carson too much. At least he tried to make some things happen. So that's my two cents about that.
I think he pressed too soon on that game, though. Classic point example is right before the half, Patrick Peterson gets the INT and returns it all the way into Carolina territory. They had an opportunity to cut that lead at 10 points going into halftime. And he threw the first pass he threw into double, triple coverage in the end zone and got picked off. I mean, that was an opportunity where they could have took their time there and had a chance to cut into the lead a little bit. So I think he started pressing a little too soon. I understand what you're saying, I could definitely see that, you know, late in the game. But I think he started pressing too soon in that game.
It was the Buckeyes, man. The Buckeyes did it to him.
Uh-oh.
No, but
I love the enthusiasm. It's going to happen.
But if you talk about it, Tay Ginn also saved that play too, because he could have gave up, right, on that Patrick Peterson interception.
Yeah.
He's the one that tracked Patrick Peterson down, and the next play is that interception from Palmer. So, you know, give him some credit for that as well.
True indeed.
He still has
so,
the speed,
like,
even at his age. Yep.
Yeah. Reminds me of Joey Gallo. Just kept that speed going, right? You know, another guy from Ohio State.
Yes, sir.
All right. So because of what happened, guys, the Patriots fired their O-line coach. Was this a surprise, Robert, or was this like somebody had to take the fall? Like the Deflategate. Sorry, I put it in there.
Obviously, you know, the Patriots offensive line, they seem to have gotten it together a little bit against the Chiefs last week, and so I thought that was going to carry over into this game. Obviously, it didn't. And obviously, we were on the road, too, so, you know, you got the crowd noise and things of that nature, too. You didn't have that effect when they were at home against the Chiefs. But the Patriots' offensive line really struggled the second half of the season. I mean, some of that had to do with injuries. And you have to realize most of Bill Belichick's head coaching career, he had Dante Scarnecchia next year as his offensive line coach. And he was one of the best in the business for a long time in the NFL. He retired a couple of years ago. And so this guy's only been the offensive line coach for 2 years. And so, I mean, he has some tough shoes to fill following Dante Scarnecchia. So that was a tough one for him to follow up. So we'll see, what Bill Belichick has up his sleeve as far as filling a position, and see if they can live up to Dante Sarnesia's shoes.
I'm glad you pronounced that, Rob, because I was going to leave that alone.
Yeah, I know, right? You can have all of that.
The new guy name is worse.
I know, right? We're going to call him Double D.
There you go.
But the thing about it is, I think it was fool's goal against Kansas City because Houston was hurt in that game, and he couldn't get after the passer like he normally does. And I think that allowed, kind of lulled the Patriots into a false sense of security. They had nothing on that tandem of Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware. And I really hate that he fired him for that, because if you look at the offensive line, it's been battered all year long. And he's not calling the plays. It could take McDaniels to, leave another tight end in and not try to do so much spread and maybe try to run a little more, throw more screens to kind of alleviate some of that pressure. He didn't do it. He kept firing on all cylinders like his tackles were holding up, and they weren't holding up. If you look at that game, they were getting pressure with 3 and 4 guys. I mean, he can't get out there and block. They just were turnstiles on the outside for those outside rushers for Denver, and even the inside pressure from Derek Wolfe as well. So I hate that they, he comes out and says, it wasn't the kicker's fault, it was all of us, and then you fired the offensive line coach who's sitting out there playing, with spare parts. I just don't like that. I don't think he could have done anything about that, really. Denver was just dominant on that defensive line.
Yeah. And that's a good point. Another thing that I add really quickly to that is absolutely no running game. A running game is a pass protector's best friend. And New England's running game has been non-existent. And I don't know if you guys realize, but Tom Brady was the Patriots' leading rusher in that game. When they threw the ball over 60 times and maybe ran the ball 15. I may be off a little bit on those numbers, but it's somewhere in that ballpark. The Patriots threw the ball over 60 times in that game and maybe ran it 15 times in that game. It's hard to protect the quarterback if you're going to not have no balance. If you're going to pass the ball every down, part of that is getting behind, but I don't think they were behind that big where they had to go away from a running game. They were never trailing by 10, 15 points in the game. And so obviously that does not help you off your offensive line. So that's a good point that you made, that offensive line coach is not responsible for calling the plays.
Right.
So no running game is not going to help them.
Yep, we concur. All right, let's kick it on. Let's keep it moving here, guys. About 12 minutes here. Thomas Davis, I know you mentioned this, JQ. He had surgery on his broken arm, but he still expects to play in the Super Bowl. This is a big move. This is a big deal if he doesn't play, but I think he's going to play, and hopefully he's going to be pretty effective. But I don't think it's going to matter because Carolina is still going to be pretty dominant. You want to talk about this really briefly, JQ?
Yeah, just to put in on that, I mean, it's amazing. He went in there to have the surgery on his arm this morning, which just tells you his mindset about getting in the Super Bowl and playing. And I also read a quote from Rivera that says that I think Steve Smith, when he was there, had a similar injury, and he played through it. So that should give the Carolina fans a little bit of optimism that Thomas Davis can come out and play. And if he's out there, he's going to go 100 miles an hour. It's just one game. He has the rest of the offseason to get it fully mended. So, giving away, this has got to come back from 3 ACL injuries to the same knee. I would not doubt his desire and his want to get in and play in the Super Bowl, and I fully expect him to play and play well.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I tell you what, if he comes from this, he'll be one tough son of a gun to come back from a broken arm and play in 2 weeks. And so it's going to be real interesting to see how effective he's going to be. But healthy, he's the best weak side linebacker in the game. There's no question about it. Even at 10 years in the league, he and Kuechly has formed an incredible linebacking duo. And Kuechly probably gets more notoriety. But Davis is one heck of a versatile weak side linebacker. He can cover as well as come up and stop the run. And obviously he'll be a big blow to Carolina. I still think they'll win the game, like you said, Andre, but it'll be still a big blow to that defense if he's not in there.
Yeah. Yep, but I agree. And like you talked about, too, just having somebody in the game. I've heard somebody commenting on the toughness about the Carolina Panthers, and this is a tough team. He's going to come back 2 weeks. Man, that whole mentality is, let's finish what we started, too. So them guys, they're on a dream season here, if you will. Let's keep it moving here. Next topic, is Cam Newton the best player in the NFL right now? Rob, let's just kind of talk about this. I'm going to say yes, and I'll let you elaborate. So what's your thoughts about Cam Newton and his performance this season?
Well, absolutely. Well, he's definitely the MVP this season, hands down. I mean, if you know, if he's not the MVP this season, it should be a riot in New York City at the NFL headquarters. Definitely, I believe Cam Newton's an MVP. And I would have to say you can put him right there as the best player in the league. He's versatile. I mean, he's a dual threat option. His accuracy has improved every year since he's been in the league. So you have to give him credit for working on his craft and improving. And that was the one downside on him the last few years, was that his accuracy wasn't really up to par. You know, the talent was there, but as you can see, his completion percentage has gone over 60-some% this season. So his craft, he's worked on it, he's improved, and he still has the dual threat option. And you can see that Carolina offense, they have really put up points here, especially in the second half of the season. They've had lots of games where they've scored over 30 to 40 points. And obviously he has a lot to do with it. And if you really look at it, he lost the best receiver in preseason, Kelvin Benjamin. Mm. But his weapons around him have gotten better as the season went along. And I think he has a lot to do with that. Devin Funchess early in the season was struggling. And he's gotten a lot better. Olsen was already a player. But Ted Ginn Jr., I mean, this guy was basically just a punt returner prior to this season. And, I mean, he wasn't. And now he's become almost an elite receiver, especially here in the last 8 to 10 games. And obviously, I think Cam Newton's got a lot to do with that. So I would definitely say yes.
And who's Philly Brown? Go ahead, JQ, your thoughts, sir.
Yeah, I know who Philly Brown is. Oh, State, baby. I love that starting wide receiver corps for Carolina. That's a phenomenal recruit, too. But, yeah, Rob took all the points. All of that, exactly. I was going to point on Kelvin Benjamin being hurt. And you know he's going to go to Greg Olsen, and yet you still can't stop him. And part of it is because he has that run-pass option. And, you know, and Olsen is wide open. And, you know, that's partly due to Olsen's route runner, but it's also the fact that you have to almost spy Cam Newton because he can take off on you as well. He has a way of getting the first down when they need them to get a first down. He made Ted Ginn a wide receiver when no other quarterback could do it. And then, you know, you got a rookie in Funchess and a third-year player or second-year player in Brown. I mean, hats off to Cam. He's really worked on it. If he could just work on his decision-making off the field, hanging out with Future and Gucci and, you know, getting chicks pregnant and the kid chosen. You know, if we could just work on that piece of it, we'd be in business. But I think it's got to be Cam right now.
Yeah. I can't believe you brought that up. Oh, man. Yeah, well, see, so this is the
where you asked that when you were supposed to be in the playbook.
Yeah, but see, you can't fault them because they're winning. If they weren't winning, i.e. Johnny Manziel, then you wouldn't normally be saying anything, you know. So they're winning, man. I mean, he's doing it, and I think there's been some great points that everyone's talking about. I mean, you try to plan for it, and I'm still in awe because – I remember whenever we started the show this season, and I was like, yeah, the Carolina Panthers not winning the division. They lost Kelvin Benjamin, but they didn't have no weapons. And then you're like, look at them. They're favored for the Super Bowl. And that is all Cam, 100% Cam, man. You know, so, you know, obviously defense as well, but I'm saying it's just right now total team game, if you will. So, yeah. All right, guys, 6 minutes here. We want to get to a couple things. I do want to talk NBA, David Blatt and the Cavaliers for the OT, but let's talk about the greatest Super Bowl of all time and your thoughts. Go ahead, Rob. You're going to kick us off here. And what do you think about that, sir?
I'm going to go with I think the greatest Super Bowl that I've seen in my time of watching the Super Bowl, I'm going to go to 1991, the Giants and the Bills, when the Giants was a huge underdog in this game. This was the Bills' first of four losing Super Bowls, but this was the one that the Bills was actually favored to win. They had a high-powered offense, leading the league in points scored, coming in. And the defensive coordinator for the Giants by the name of Bill Belichick put together an outstanding game plan for the Giants and slowed down the Bills' offense. And what he did, I remember that game like it was yesterday, and this was obviously right after the Iraq War, too, so you know it was a very sensitive time in America as well. But I remember that game like it was yesterday, and Bill Belichick's strategy was that he was rushing two guys the entire game, pretty much dropping nine guys in the coverage the entire game, and it really confused Jim Kelly, Tane, that Buffalo Bills offense. And to me, obviously, Scott Norwood missed the field goal at the end of the game, where the Bills would have still had a chance to win. But he missed the field goal, and to this day, I think he still gets death threats there in Buffalo, unfortunately. But that was a heck of a game plan by Parcells and Jeff Hostetler, matter of fact, the backup quarterback for the Giants, helped, you know, win that game. They controlled the game. Otis Anderson was running hard, controlled the tempo. And Belichick once again put together a genius of a game plan to slow down that offense. And I think it's still the closest Super Bowl to this day, too, with a one-point victory.
Thank you, Robert. Appreciate that. JQ?
Well, I was going to recuse myself from this because my team has lost 2 Super Bowls to the 49ers, so I don't really have a lot of great Super Bowl memories, to quite be honest with you. I mean, I watch it, but with my team being involved, you know, Joe Montana, yeah, you know, whatever. But in the interest of answering the question, I think the one that sticks out to me the most is that St. Louis-Tennessee game.
I thought that was too.
Coming out with Kurt Warner and, you know, and Isaac King and Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce, and when they actually used Marshall Faulk correctly in that one, they didn't do it in the next one against New England. But just the way that game ended with Dyson stretching out and just missing out getting to the goal line. I mean, just the thing from beginning to end, where Tennessee actually came back in that game. You know, I got to see my homeboy Eddie George, you know, put on a little show in the second half. So, I mean, for me, that's the one that I would say for right now, because sometimes we get some, you know, kind of wonky Super Bowls. But outside of the one that Rob mentioned, because that was a good one, I thought about that one too. Also because of that fantastic performance that Whitney Houston put on for the Star Spangled Banner in the beginning. But outside of that, I'm going to go with the St. Louis Tennessee one.
Yeah, that was definitely, I had that one ranked pretty high as well. It would have been easy for me to pick the Saints winning the Super Bowl, but I was trying to be a little objective.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
I gotcha. Yeah, I thought that's where you were gonna go, really, Rob. I thought you were gonna point it out with this. You surprised me with that one, man.
From a fan perspective, that's my favorite, but absolutely. I think the best game was that 1991 Super Bowl, and definitely that Titans Rams game is definitely right up there near the top, if not at the top as well.
It's tough, guys, because you know there's been a lot of games and blowouts, and I like the closer games. If you will, you know, you want to take it back to, and this is me thinking, you know, just a couple, I'm kind of like looking at kind of a list of all the games, if you will, too. I was a huge fan of certain moments, like whenever the Packers and the Patriots here, whenever Desmond Howard had that kickoff return, Reggie White kind of did his thing, the Brett Favre offense, that was kind of a good comeback, you know, because that was just a good game, too. Then I remember, like, you know, Donovan McNabb puking and whatnot, and, you know, the Patriots and the Eagles, that was such a tight game. You know, yeah. But there's certain moments. And, you know, obviously, you remember certain games, you know, whenever, you know, San Francisco, they're killing teams. And then, you know, but the closer games seem to, there's certain moments, you know. And I remember, like, certain moments whenever, you know, the Steelers and your boys making that great catch, you know, Larry Fitzgerald having his moment. It's just, like, certain games that you remember that it wasn't a blowout, but this is very, very close. Even, you know, obviously, Marshawn Lynch, you know, or the whole thing whenever, you know, the Patriots won last year. So there's a lot of moments, I think, out of that, too.
Yeah.
But I digress, guys, because I went a little crazy here. So we got about 2 minutes. We actually got about a minute left here, minute 20-something. So, Rob, can you kind of kick it off into the OT portion, and we'll talk about some NFL teams, and I do want to talk about the Cavs as well. Can you kind of kick that off as well, sir?
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning in to our live portion of the show tonight. We greatly appreciate it. Our next live portion will be on next Tuesday night. We'll be on the air on Tuesday night next week, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 Central. That'll be 8 p.m. for our friends in California on Tuesday night. We get ready to go into our OT portion. Unfortunately, we can't give you this portion of our show live. But if you click on the same link on tomorrow, we still have some football. We still have some NBA we're going to get into. So click on the same link while you're on your lunch breaks on tomorrow. And you get to hear some more talking sports. Of course, write us on Facebook and Twitter. Let us know how you like the show. Let us know if you disagree or disagree with what we're talking about. Thanks a lot.
JQ?
Yeah, I thought I was going to have to cut you out the show, Andre, with all these moments, because I was waiting on you to go to Montana to Taylor. I was going to take you out the show, bro. As always, appreciate everybody for calling me in. Stay classy, San Diego. And don't let the Chargers move. Don't let Oakland move to San Diego, because that would be ridiculous. Keep the Chargers there.
I agree. Shout out to Ryan. Hope you listen to too, Ryan, as well. That's what's up. Man, all right, gentlemen, we are officially to the OT portion. We got about 15 minutes here. Let's kick off a couple things. Rob, I want to talk about the combine remaining in Indianapolis through 2020. I think it's a great move. Anything you want to talk about that really quickly?
Well, I think you think it's a great move because that's kind of a homer because you're from Indianapolis. But
come on, man.
Well, you know. Oh, hey, come on. You got to be objective here. I mean, obviously, Indianapolis has done a great job hosting the combine, but I personally feel like they ought to move it around a little bit, give, you know, different cities a chance to have the opportunity to bring this into their cities and, you know, other fans get an opportunity to be kind of close to the event. And but, you know, obviously, Indianapolis has done a great job, nothing against them. But I would have liked to see them move around a little bit, just like the draft. I would like to see them move it around a little more, too.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is. I agree. I think it should stay there. I think Indianapolis has been a good partner. If you look when the Super Bowl was in Indianapolis, it was a great venue as well. But I think one of the biggest reasons why it stays in Indianapolis is because Indianapolis is so small. In that time of the offseason, it allows the GMs and the coaches to remain in close quarters with each other as opposed to being in the big city like L.A. or Chicago or New York where everybody can kind of fan out. You know, in Indianapolis, you can probably get a lot of people drafted or talked to that, you know, rise or fall, and a lot of deals get brokered with free agency coming around the corner. So I think that's another, you know, understated reason why it remains in Indianapolis, just the small-knitness of the city where people kind of have to be on top of each other, so to speak, and then you can get more things done. I think it's a good move for the NFL.
Yeah, Robert.
Hey, I didn't see anything was wrong with Indianapolis. I think they've done a fine job. I just would like to see it moved around a little bit.
We want to move it to New Orleans? Is that where we want to move it to?
Hey, let New Orleans have some love. Let Atlanta have some love. Hey, let Miami have a little love. But I agree with JQ. Miami might be too much tempting for these guys. So, too much temptation.
Exactly.
Man, keep them where they can't do anything, man. What are you going to do in Indianapolis? I'm from Indianapolis. You can't do nothing there, bro. You know, I'm just saying. You know, go to
the steak and go to sleep.
Yeah, man. Keep it real, bro. That's what's up, JQ. Appreciate that. What? Really quickly, Rob, name your five teams that missed the playoffs. I want to talk about the Cavaliers situation too, guys. If we have some time too, I want to save some time for that too. So go ahead and talk about your five teams real quickly. Jake, if you want to do the five teams too, but go ahead, Rob. Go ahead, real quick.
I'll go through it really quick. I'll go five teams that. First team I'll go through will be the Dallas Cowboys. Obviously, a lot of injuries this season. Tony Romo, they still have to fix the running back position. Their offensive line is still going to be great, and if you can get a healthy Dez Bryant back. They could be still a sleeper team in that NFC East, which was still fairly weak this past season. The next team we're going to talk about is the Baltimore Ravens. They lose the number one draft pick, Breshad Perriman, wide receiver, Central Florida. Losing him early was a big blow. Obviously losing Flacco, Terrell Suggs, Steve Smith Sr. They had a ton of injuries, especially in the secondary on defense as well. That's another team that can possibly, you know, rise up on next season as well. Of course, Indianapolis, Andrew Luck, the injuries that they've had, you know, one of the better young quarterbacks in the game. They still have to fix that defense. The Colts was ranked 26th in the league in total defense. If they can get that fixed, and along with getting a healthy Andrew Luck, who knows for them, they could be a sleeper next year. The Giants, new head coach. You still have Eli Manning. You still have those weapons in the passing game. They're another team that's obviously going to have some kind of improvement on defense to also have a chance. They're near the bottom as well. And last but not least, it might be the better team of this group outside of the Colts would be the Jets that defense. And the head coach there did a phenomenal job. I think they have to figure out if Ryan Fitzpatrick is the answer and off at quarterback. They're going to have to answer that question. He threw for close to 4,000 yards and 31 TDs this year, so he put up some great numbers. So they have to make that decision if they're going forward with him or if they're still in the market for a quarterback.
Go ahead, JQ.
Yeah, those are good. Our five good ones. I had some of those, but, you know, I'm still high on that AFC East. You already mentioned the Jets. I mean, they were just a bonehead last game away in Buffalo, but let's talk about those Bills. I think they may have finally figured it out with Tyrod. He's got Sammy Watkins. He's got LeSean McCoy. He's got Clay. He's got some decent weapons. If Rex can finally get that defense to play like we thought they should have been playing, I think they can make a step forward. And I feel the same way about the Dolphins as well. They have a ton of talent on the offensive side of the ball, but they got to get Sue to channel that anger in the right direction. They got to get Cameron Wake back to playing the way he can play, get a couple more linebackers and maybe a cornerback, and I think they could surprise some people. So that AFC East, I think, is going to be there for sure next year if some teams can tweak some things and get it figured out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely like I definitely like the Bills. That's definitely a good one as well.
Got it. I like that, guys. I want to really get into this, guys. Any updates on the Warriors Spurs game right now?
Yeah.
Rob, do we have anything? What's up with that, JQ? What's going on with that? I didn't get a chance to see that.
It's been a little helter-kelter in the beginning of the game. I've seen a lot of turnovers, but Golden State is up 17 right now. They are basically just saying, okay, if you're going to play Aldridge and David West, we're just going to run. And that's probably the reason I've seen a lot of turnovers, a lot of kind of some ridiculous plays, to be quite honest. But, you know, it's Golden State at home, and they're kind of taking it to San Antonio right now.
Gotcha.
Yeah, the only way you're going to have a chance against the Warriors, you're going to have some kind of a small ball lineup they can play with them. And no team to seem to be able to match up with their small lineup.
Agreed.
Gotcha. Cool. All right, gentlemen, let's talk about this. This was a pretty interesting move last week in that Dave Vlatt was fired. You've heard a lot of scuttlebutt as far as why he was fired. Was LeBron the reason? And this is camp. I guess, do you think it's pretty accurate? I'll start with you, JQ, as far as was LeBron kind of pulling the strings here, or was it the fact that David Vlatt didn't know what he was doing, or I heard some kind of bull things about that. But go ahead, your thoughts about this.
Yeah, I mean, I read some stories about it, and it really, to me, cast that Cavs locker room in a negative light where they didn't really try to embrace David Blatt, and they were expecting him, you know, they weren't giving him credit for being a coach for as long as he was in Europe, and they wanted to call him a rookie and this, that, and the other. But let's make no bones about it. They made a mistake about hiring Blatt before they knew that LeBron was coming back, and they undersold themselves in their opportunity to get LeBron back. They should have just waited. And then they undercut Blatt by, you know, bringing Lou in and making him the highest paid assistant. There's no way that they make this move, I don't care what they say, without consulting with LeBron James. I mean, he is the face of that organization. He is that team. He's the reason why they're relevant again. So they can't tell me that he didn't know. He had input into it. I think it was a mismatch from the beginning. I just don't know why you wouldn't have done it at the end of last season, so you give Lou the whole year to put his imprint on the team instead of firing a coach who was 31-11. That to me is just crazy after two games in the middle of the season playing a great Golden State team and losing to San Antonio as well, two teams that are on historic pace. So to me, I think that was mishandled. They should have done that this past offseason and not done it right now.
Go ahead, Rob. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, totally agree. Now, do I think LeBron James went in there and the general manager and the owner office and demanded a firing? No, I don't think that's how it went down. But this is how I kind of picture it kind of went down. I kind of picture they sensing his disappointment. And when you sense a player like that disappointment, you feel like you have a great player like that, you have to make a move. And I think that I don't think it was a Magic Johnson how he went in there and got Paul Westhead fired with the Lakers, and how Michael Jordan went in and got Doug Collins fired with the Bulls. I don't think it was quite that, like, the way they handled it. I think they just sensed LeBron James' disappointment with the way things were going. And so I don't get that he's the type of person that would just go in there and demand the firing. But I still think it was based on LeBron James, but it was based on how he was feeling about the team. They sensed his disappointment, and that's why they made the move.
Whether it's right or wrong.
Yeah, go ahead.
It was passive-aggressive. I hear what you're saying. I don't think he went in there and done that. But with his body language and the way he's conducted himself in that locker room, he's the leader, and everybody was following in behind him. And I don't think he did enough to try to bridge that gap. It was very passive-aggressive, and I don't like the way he handled that. If you're going to make that kind of money and be the face of it, then, you know, put forth the efforts. You're 31-11, you know, so you got time to still work some things out. You can sit down and say, hey, coach, we kind of do this in the NBA. You know, I know you got a track record. Let's try to make this work. Mm-hmm. You could tell he wanted Lou to be the coach. And not going into that, I agree with Rob. I don't think he went into the GM's office and said, hey, fire this guy. But his body language and the way he was conducting himself was basically the equivalent of going into the office and saying, hey, this guy has to go.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And, you know, there are several reports that Lou had to save Blatt from some, you know, horrible, you know, he didn't quite understand all of the NBA rules.
Yep.
There was a recent game in particular. I hear that he had to pull Blatt from calling a timeout. Blatt didn't realize he didn't have any timeouts left. And and Lou saved them. I mean, there are lots of stories like that as well. But obviously, when you look at their record, it's still hard to justify them firing Blatt. I mean, I think that's still the bottom line.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, just kind of be the other side of that. You know, I heard some things too. Like, you know, he was calling, like Blatt was calling plays for Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving wasn't even in the game, and they're like, you know, he's not in the game. You know, and they're like, oh. And you mentioned the whole thing with the timeouts and whatnot too. So clearly there was some type of struggling. And it's like whenever you have a talented player, sometimes you don't have to be the best coach because talent's going to take over. And you know, it's like this guy. We don't know the full details, guys. But I do think it was kind of like Blatt was kind of like he was a scapegoat. But that team needs to kind of get a little further along, I think, you know. And granted, like I said, 31-11. I mean, I got you. I hear you, JQ. But there's some games and maybe situations where having somebody that kind of knows what's happening can probably avoid a couple of losses. That's what I'm kind of thinking from that vantage point. But anyway, that's my thought really quickly. All right, we got about 4 minutes here. Really quickly, Rob, LeBron, since he can handle Lou's criticism, what do you think that means?
Well, basically, Tyronn Lue had a meeting with LeBron James and basically says, I'm going to hold you accountable. I'm going to hold you accountable in front of the whole team. And I basically need you to receive it in front of the whole team and be able to be willing to take it in front of the whole team. I think that's the right approach because I think that's the way Greg Popovich has handled his stars in San Antonio. And Tim Duncan, I think, has done a phenomenal job over the last 17 years being able to take the heat from Greg Popovich. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's made them so good for the last 17 years practically as well. And because Tim Duncan has been also a leader, but he's been also been able to receive criticism from Greg Popovich and be able to grow from it. And that's also the rest of the team will see that and was able to grow from it. So I think that's the message Tyronn Lue is trying to send to LeBron. It's like, hey, you know, there's going to be some times I don't have to get in your face. You're going to have to step it up and be an even bigger leader or even bigger star for this team and be critical to them in front of the team as well.
Is that accurate, JQ?
Yeah, but my comeback is LeBron's been in the league long enough to know that he's the face of it, and he knows when he's messed up. He should be able to be critical of himself and hold himself to a higher standard. I don't know why he necessarily needs Dave Blatt to get in his business like that in order to fall in. He just didn't respect Blatt, and he just respects Tyronn Lue, and that's what it comes down to, I think. Is respect. You know, at this point in his career, he should be able to come in there and almost be like a second head coach, you know, to uphold what Blatt was trying to do. Even if he's got some bumps in the road, say, hey, coach, you know, I got your back, I got this, you know, call these plays or don't call this for me, you know, he could have handled it better. You know, he's not a rookie anymore, no phenom. He's a grizzled vet at this point in time. So I think that's just, you know, lip service of trying to get everybody to fall in line. I think they should have already been able to fall in line because they're following his lead anyway, and that's why I think, you know, the way he was carrying himself was just wrong, and he's going to have to, you know, come back and show me that he's more coachable and can do things the right way. I just don't think he handled it the way he should have been, the stature that he has in that organization on that team. But I hear what you're saying, Rob. But I just don't necessarily know if it should have to come to that.
Gotcha. Fair enough, man. I think the fact that Lou played in the league has something to do with it too, guys. And there's a little respect as far as that and what's going on, too. So that's my little two cents. All right, gentlemen, time always falls.
Well, he understands the NBA game a little bit better. That's clearly.
True.
Yeah. All that. All right, guys, once again, time is falling. We're having fun, guys. 2 minutes here. Rob, go ahead and end the show. Let's get ready to get ready for next week.
Yeah, quick fantasy shout-out. Saints Pelicans 23 still in first place in our fantasy basketball league. He also still had the biggest win of the week with an 8-0 shutout over the Drew. So congrats to him as well. Once again, we're going to be on the air on Tuesday night on next week, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So definitely stay tuned. We'll be a little bit closer to kickoff for the Super Bowl. Obviously, we're in the heart of NBA and college basketball. We got NFL combines coming up shortly after the Super Bowl. So stay in tune to what's happening. Talking sports, we're going to be right there for you. So definitely stay tuned to what's going on in the sports world. Good night, people.
Thank you.
Love you, everybody. Appreciate you listening in and downloading the podcast. Talk to you next week. Be safe.
That is what it's all about. Gentlemen, it's always a pleasure to show the field of battle with you. Once again, see you guys same time, Well, not same time. Well, same time, but a different day next week too. So a lot of love. Like we talked about, follow us on Facebook. Show us some love. Give us those comments. That's what we like to do. And, you know, we don't get a chance to hit all the topics, gentlemen, but good times, good talks. And we'll see you guys next week. Deuces.
Yes, sir.